This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Now we're going to talk about something we all have, personality. Maybe you're talkative and extroverted, or you've always felt a little more shy and introspective. Maybe you're both talkative and introspective. When it comes to agreeableness, do you generally trust other people, or are you a little more suspicious? Our next guest, Olga Hazan, wanted to see if she could change her personality, and she gave herself 3 months to do it. She tries a gratitude journal, an anger management class over Zoom, and improv. That's even though, as she writes, her vibe is less yes and a little more well, actually. Olga is a staff writer at The Atlantic. Her recent piece is titled, I Gave Myself 3 Months to Change My Personality. The results were mixed. Olga, welcome to the 21st Show. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
For her project, Olga consulted a number of experts in psychology, including Dr. Brent Roberts, who's a professor of psychology at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. His research focuses on personality change across adulthood and the life experiences associated with personality change. Brent, welcome to the 21st to you as well.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Listeners, if you want to take a personality assessment and play along at home, we've posted a link to a well-regarded one on our Twitter account, at 21st Show. That's at 21st Show. You can also join our conversation by calling 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Olga, so what inspired this experiment in personality change for you?
Yeah, good question. Well, so like everyone else with the pandemic, you know, I was spending a lot more time by myself and not really getting out and doing things. And I kind of started to reevaluate, you know, at first I was like, oh, this is great. You know, I'm an introvert and I love this and I could do this forever. But then I kind of started to wonder whether that was really true and whether, you know, I might not, you know, be kind of like selling myself a little bit short as far as how much interaction I really need. And, you know, whether I'm really quite such a loner who doesn't need any kind of stimulation. And, you know, I'd always struggled with anxiety. And it just seemed like a way to kind of work on myself in this way that I had always kind of aspired to, but never really successfully did. And then having a magazine assignment tends to make you actually stick with self-improvement as opposed to just abandoning it at the first, you know, sign of trouble. So it kind of all came together that way.
Yeah, the impending pressure of the deadline. There's really nothing like that as motivation, is there? So before we get to whether your personality changed, let's talk about the baseline you were starting from. In your article for The Atlantic, you write, I've never really liked my personality and other people don't like it either. In grad school, a partner and I were assigned to write fake obituaries for each other by interviewing our friends and families. The nicest thing my partner could shake out of my loved ones was that I really enjoy grocery shopping. So Olga, how would you describe your personality?
Yeah, well, so the way I would describe it in the way that these kind of science-backed tests would describe it is that I'm very high on neuroticism, which is sort of depression and anxiety, and I am low on extroversion. And I'm about, or I started out about in the middle on agreeableness, you know, kind of neither too high or too low. But I am, on the plus side, very high in openness to experiences. And I'm also very conscientious. So those are two things that I have going for me.
Yeah, that's great. We took this among our staff here. We took one of the quick versions of these personality assessments, and we were all pretty high on openness, a little all over the board on other things. Brent Roberts, I want to bring you into the conversation now, and I want to begin by playing a clip from a 1951 educational film called Improve Your Personality.
What do we mean when we talk about personality? What is your personality? It is the way you get along with other people around you and with your changing environment. You want certain things from other people and from environment. The way to go about getting those things reveals your personality. For example, did you ever want to go one place when the gang wanted to go somewhere else? What did you do? How pleasant was your personality?
So, Brent, has our definition of personality changed much since the era of black and white instructional films? How do you, you know, is it how you, quote, handle it when the gang wants to go somewhere else?
I think both. I'd like to thank you for putting me into an immediate depression by finding out that you really haven't done much since the 1950s. That was a really nice find. It's not a bad definition or perspective on how we define personality even today, which I guess you take some comfort in the sense that the institution in humans hasn't changed much since then, nor should it have, unless we have suffered some severe evolutionary insult that would have changed humanity in a way that would be surprising. So I think the definition still holds. It is the way you interact with and behave with other people, especially, and what you want out of those interactions, and then how you perform in other domains that are related to what we do as humans, work and relationships and creative outputs and things of that sort. So yeah, that was pretty good.
So Brent, what are the big five dimensions of personality that psychologists talk about and that Olga refers to inner peace? We heard her talk about neuroticism is one.
Yeah, so it's one of the main areas that we focus on by default. It's not the only area of personality that we are concerned with, but it is a reliable taxonomy of five domains. And we call them the big five, not because we think largely about them, but because they're big domains of traits, not just singular things, and they're not really purely independent, but they roughly cover the topography of human personality in trait form and the ways that we act and behave in a consistent fashion. So the first that we find is typically extroversion, introversion. Olga said she's introverted, I'm extroverted, for example, and those of us who are extroverted tend to speak possibly too much and too often. Those who are introverted don't choose to do so. The second domain is agreeableness, which is anchored on the high end by being warm and nurturing, and on the low end by being, let's say, cold and aloof and distrustful. And the third domain is conscientiousness, which has everything to do with work, achievement, and school. And on the high end, those who are lucky enough to be conscientious are organized and persistent and reliable and industrious. And those of us on the lower end tend to be disorganized, and maybe we like to argue we use our energies efficiently if we want to try to be euphemistic about not being hardworking. And then, of course, the fourth domain, if you want to keep everything positive, we call it emotional stability, just because of the vagaries of the way we discovered things. We call it neuroticism by default. On the high end there, that's being anxious and depressed and worried. On the low end, you're calm and serene. And again, if you're lucky enough to be on that end, you're in good standing. And then the last domain is openness to experience, which is, you know, high-end creativity, thinking broadly, liking to do different things and getting exposed to different ideas and such. And on the lower end is being more concrete, liking to do actions and not necessarily talk about big ideas, so to speak. And those are five working domains. We're still arguing as scientists whether there's a sixth. Humorously, in other countries, you find a sixth dimension of honesty. We didn't discover that in the United States for some reason. I do not joke, actually I do, but in this case it is true that we're still having those arguments. But we do like this system because it gives us something of an organizational system that we can use to, you know, converse with each other. It's made us a more disciplined field in the sense that it's organized a lot of things. And again, I should say there's other aspects to personality, motivations and abilities and skills and things that we talk about also, but the big five tend to be one of our primary areas of focus.
Okay. So yeah, I mentioned I scored pretty high on openness. I'm fairly agreeable down the middle on extroversion, not super conscientious. I hope my boss is not listening. But on the plus side, I'm really low on neuroticism, 10th percentile. I don't know what that means. But Olga, you took this test. You talked about some of your results. What did you want to change about your big five?
Yeah, so the biggest thing is that I really wanted to reduce my neuroticism, which was sort of off the charts, although technically on the charts, because
right.
Everything is on the charts, but it was just very high on the charts. I also wanted to become more extroverted, and kind of along the way, I was hoping to bump up my agreeableness a little bit, you know, mostly just because I have a job where I have to interact with a lot of people and kind of empathize with their point of view. And I kind of felt like it would help me connect better with people that I, you know, talk to in the course of my job if I was slightly more agreeable.
Brent, from the article, when Olga reached out to you and talked about agreeableness, you said you were surprised by that. Can you talk about why?
Well, I mean, it is the case that some of us would like to become more agreeable, though that it's somewhat ironic because a lot of times when we are disagreeable, we're fine with that. If people are truly disagreeable, for example, you know, they understand that they're not the nicest person in the room, and oftentimes have reconciled that.
I'm not here to make friends, right?
Yeah, you know, and it's just like, look, somebody has to be tough around this place, and I'm going to be that person. So there's a lot of ways of potentially rationalizing your low agreeableness in a way that's quite effective. I think Lance Armstrong, who was renowned for being a less than agreeable individual in the Peloton, said that he had a strong personality, which I thought was one of the most masterful, you know, reconceptualizations of disagreeableness that I've ever heard. And so you know, we ask people in our research, how do you want to change? And agreeableness is interesting because you get a little bit of both, and it is more stereotypical in some respects that people who are really high often feel like they get short shrift in our society, that they're, you know, they're the folks who get walked over by the, especially the extroverts, and the disagreeable people who demand of them things that they want, and then they give it. And so it's an interesting domain because you have a mix there. Other domains, people are uniformly desiring to go up on. Extroversion is a good example of that we don't find too many people thinking that they want to become less extroverted. They want to usually become more.
Interesting. All right, let me take a moment to remind our listeners, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with staff writer Olga Hazan from The Atlantic magazine, who recently documented her project to change her personality over the course of 3 months. One of the experts she consulted for that article is also with us. Brent Roberts is a psychology professor at the University of Illinois, whose research focuses on personality change. You can join our conversation if you want to share your personality test results. Again, we put a link to a well-regarded version of that on our Twitter page at 21st Show at 21st Show. Or if you just have a question for one of our guests, the number to call is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. So, Olga, what advice did you get when it came to actually beginning to change your personality?
Yeah, so the kind of advice that's really simple but appears to work is just that you have to basically fake it until you make it. So you have to actually kind of just behave like the personality that you would like to embody. For my attempts at personality change, I did things like improv, and I meditated, and I went to bars and talked to strangers, even though I don't really like doing all those things.
That sounds terrible.
But I kind of, you know, I was like, you know, you kind of have to put yourself out there and actually do the activities that are like the new personality. And some of it, you know, I still don't like talking to strangers in bars, but I I did come around to liking some of the activities that I tried, especially improv, and I'm still working on enjoying meditation more, but it's not very natural for me.
Yeah, was it like physically painful when you had to start out and force yourself to you know, go up to someone you didn't know and try and strike up a conversation?
Yeah, so I mean, I will say that like I had it a little bit easy because some people were, you know, I think this was when right before the Omicron wave, when people were kind of like getting out and about. So I had these folks that I know from the internet who, or I didn't know them, but I sort of casually interacted with them, who were like, hey, we're all going to a bar and, you know, do you want to join us? And we'll just, you know, drink whiskey and talk. And I was like, okay, this is not really something that I'd normally do, but, you know, because I'm trying this personality change thing, I'm going to give it a shot. But then when I tried to do that on my own by just talking to people that I had not coordinated with beforehand and that were just strangers in a bar, it was very painful, and I was very happy to be done with that particular task.
What was the Zoom anger management class like for you?
Yeah, so that that kind of surprised me because I didn't realize that it was like so geared toward people who were basically in a court diversion program.
You were the only one who wasn't, right?
Yeah. So I thought it was just with people who had, you know, struggled with their anger or were looking for ways to better, you know, manage their anger. But it was people who were there to like get a reduced sentence for some something that they had done. So anyway, but you know, it kind of made it more interesting because I think, you know, people's anger had really, you know, no one was there because they like loved their anger and they like wanted to keep being angry. And it was interesting to like share all those stories And to hear from people about how anger affected their lives and how, you know, they struggled to, control their emotions and regulate them. So although it was like a little bit tedious, it was kind of actually cool to interact with other people who kind of admitted that you know, they struggled with emotional regulation from time to time.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing you were open to new experiences, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Brent, are there certain traits that affect people, you know, in a bigger way, more positively or negatively?
Yeah. I mean, neuroticism obviously is a domain that affects people, at least in our society, in manifestations and mental health issues. So those of us who suffer from higher forms of anxiety and depression are also going to show up in a therapist's office more often than not. And, you know, that's a serious thing to consider. The folks who tend to be lower on conscientiousness also tend to suffer more in terms of physical health. So they don't live as long as other people. They tend to suffer from most of the maladies that we get as adults because they accumulate lots of bad things as they go through life because they're being impulsive and maybe doing things like drinking or doing drugs that might damage them physically in some way. So those are the big two when it comes to, let's say, domains that affect people's physical and mental health directly that we see. The other ones do so, but less profoundly so.
Interesting. Now I'm getting a little higher on my neuroticism scale as we think about
your lack of conscientiousness should cause you concern. Yes. And there might be some utility in you know, being neurotic in the time of a pandemic. To be honest with you, I think it's one of the first situations I think that we faced in generations where being anxious is probably a good thing.
No, that's how I've always spun my distractibility to myself. Is like I would have been the one who heard the saber-toothed tiger coming, right, when we were all sitting around the campfire.
Or you might not have been paying attention when it came in the cave. So. You never know.
Yeah. All right. We need to take a break. Let me just remind listeners, you can join our conversation at 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. More to come with Olga Hazan, who's a staff writer at The Atlantic. And her recent piece, one of the cover stories this month, actually, is called I Gave Myself 3 Months to Change My Personality. The results were mixed. We're also speaking with Professor Brent Roberts, who is in psychology at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. If you want to join us, we'd love to hear about your personality. And if you've tried to change it, how did that go? The number to call, 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455, or tweet us at 21st Show. More to come after a short break. Stay with us. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about personality and whether it's possible to change your personality and how you might go about doing that. And we're pegging this conversation to one of the cover stories in the Atlantic magazine, the latest issue. It's called I Gave Myself 3 Months to Change My Personality. The results were mixed. It's by Olga Hazan, a staff writer at the magazine. She's with us, as well as one of the experts she consulted, who is Dr. Brent Roberts, professor of psychology at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. His research focuses on personality change across adulthood and the life experiences associated with personality change. We have a link to an assessment on our Twitter page, 21STShow. That's at 21st Show. You can also join our conversation now at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Olga, I wonder if you felt like doing these activities, right? The gratitude journal, the improv class, if maybe you were kind of like betraying your core self in some way.
I did sometimes. Yeah. Like, I definitely, especially in improv, I felt a lot of the time like I was basically acting like someone who likes improv. But it wasn't really clear to me whether that was a betrayal or not. You know, it was sort of like, well, you know, maybe if I act like someone who likes improv, I'll enjoy improv more, you know, rather than if I'm like, you know, dragging myself kicking and screaming into every class. One of the experts that I talked to does think that if people kind of act outside their nature for too long, they kind of get burned out or kind of cynical. And so he kind of speculated that that might be what was happening with me, is that I was like acting so differently that I was like, oh, you know, no one can be trusted to be really themselves, you know? But I don't really know about that. Like, I kind of feel like everyone has like both like extroverted and introverted impulses, and everyone has, you know, really kind and really kind of like mean impulses inside of them. And it kind of, you know, it's not really a betrayal to like listen to a certain set of impulses or to act on them.
Right. The old angel and devil on the shoulder in the cartoon.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. Brent, what do you think? Is our personality fixed for the most part? Can it be changed? And how much?
Of course it can be changed. I did want to just comment a little bit on that part of Olga's story, because I really liked that. Because one of the things that you see with life and with experiences is not the simple kind of like, oh, I'm going to fake it till I make it and accumulate this quality or this skill. Sometimes by you know, trying things and doing things new, you actually find out, for example, in this case, maybe your first estimate of your agreeableness was too high and you might not be as nice as you thought you were because you just hadn't put yourself to the test. So I think that's one thing to consider in these efforts, is that one of the consequences of trying to change yourself may be that you go in quote unquote the wrong direction, but that might actually be the right direction in the sense that that's where you might truly be. So I really like that result of Olga's efforts as a possibility. And that's a different type of change, right? You're trying to figure out who you are, not just trying to, you know, gain something or lose something. To answer your question, yeah, we've been doing research for decades now in which we find when we track people for years and years that they do develop and change in directions that oftentimes look like maturity, for example. And then more recently, we have been doing active interventions and tracking interventions that other clinicians have been enacting, and finding that when people go through some active effort to treat themselves or change themselves, they do actually change, at least on the indicators that we measure, such as their self-reports. Whether this is consequential for their life or not is still an open question.
All right, I want to go to the phones now. Susan is on the line from Munster, Indiana. Susan, thank you for calling in.
Oh, that's okay. I love the show. I was wondering, is procrastination a personality trait? Because that's one thing I would love to change about myself.
Yeah, same with that. Go ahead, Brent, if you want to weigh in on that.
Yeah, I mean, there are a bunch of folks who study procrastination and how it relates to how we function. And yes, you're not alone, because many of us do explore that same dimension often. So, and to the extent that it is a habit or a pattern that you see in yourself over time, then that would qualify as a personality trait, and then would invite, let's say, some other strategies to try to deal with it, I suspect. And there are lots of self-help books and programs focused on procrastination that may or may not be effective for you, but they are out there.
And Susan, you were also wondering, go ahead, about...
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, do you know of a good one? a good book or anything on it?
I've been meaning to get to it for a long time. but no, my apologies. I don't at the moment have one at my fingertips. Sorry.
Yeah, I've got several that are not as well read as they should be on my bookshelf. Brent, let me ask you. I'm intrigued by something you talked about you know, maybe by taking that improv class, we learned something about ourselves. You know, maybe we had a wrong estimate of our agreeableness. I'm sure there's been studies about this. Do these self-assessments of personality, do they conflict in, you know, large degree or in lesser degree to what other people think of as our personalities?
Conflict might be too strong of a term. Do they agree? Not as much as we would like them to. So it's another thing to explore. The next article that Olga could write would be, instead of asking herself where she stood, asking her friends and seeing whether, one, they agree with her about her estimate of her personality, and two, whether they see any change in what she does over time. You know, it's one of the classic interesting conundrums in our field, that the other people have opinions about us and we have opinions about ourselves, and the two are related but not related enough to say that they're the same thing, which is a fascinating feature of human nature, right? That our reputation might be something different than our self-concept. So no, they are, I wouldn't say they're in conflict, but they're not as overlapping as at least the scientists would like them to be.
Olga, how about that? Did you have family or friends who thought your personality had actually shifted over the time of your project?
My boyfriend, who is probably the person who knows me the best and has, especially during the pandemic, been spending 24/7 with me, did feel like my personality changed. He especially said that I seemed calmer and more grateful. So maybe that's because I was constantly doing gratitude time and writing everything down that I was grateful for. So he couldn't help but notice. he did notice that change. But caveat that further, he's a very positive person who is not neurotic at all and just tends to see the good in people and like is kind of like, you know, I whatever you're doing is great. So it might be, that assessment might be colored by his personality too.
Interesting. So, I mean, do you think, Olga, your personality has actually changed, or is it just a change in your routine and habits? I mean, is there a core you that's shifted, or maybe that's all personality is our routine and habits in some ways?
Yeah. So Brent can talk a little bit more, in an evidence-backed way about the difference between routine and habits and personality. I definitely feel like when I was in the throes of this experiment and doing all of this stuff and really putting myself out there and meditating and all the rest, that I did feel really different. Like every day my thoughts and my behaviors felt pretty different from what I would have normally done. Or at least I knew how to recover from those like horrible, you know, crisis moments that anxious people have where you're just like, nothing's working and everything's terrible. But then Omicron happened and I wasn't able to do a lot of these activities. I couldn't really meet up with new people and I couldn't go to improv and everything. So I do feel like I kind of retracted a little bit maybe during that time, during those few months, just because I kind of had to like go back into my little pandemic shell. And I don't know. It's kind of been a little bit of a two steps forward, one step back thing for me.
Brent, how about that? Can you talk a little bit about routines and habits versus, you know, actual personality?
Yeah, I think in some ways, if it truly becomes a habit, there's not much distinction to be made between that and your personality. They're both quite the same. Of course, some of the people who focus on habits might talk about something more narrow than your personality, but your personality is one big habit if you want to think about it that way. And it is the case that there's a question about whether the change that occurs in the short run is something that stays in place over the long run. And by definition, that would be personality change. So in some ways, it's premature to ask Olga, I think, because we would want to see her in a year or maybe longer to see if the gains that were made stick and whether they get what I would call consolidated, that you actually bring them into your persona and they actually start causing you to do things differently in the future. And you know, we do have some studies that have done that, and we do see that in many cases, people who do change their personality do actually consolidate and stay that way over time. This is not to say that every change that you experience is permanent. There's been some really nice studies, in fact, about the pandemic, where you see fluctuations in the Big Five in very sensible ways. And, you know, during shutdowns, people get less extroverted, which makes really good sense. And then when things open up, they go back to be higher in extroversion. That wouldn't be what I would call a personality change. That would be a fluctuation or a state change. And those things happen all the time. Of course, one leads to the other. So you have to change the way you behave and the way you think in the moment to be able to make something long-term. But I do think that practicing it and consolidating it are key.
Brent, it strikes me that there's a conflation happening out there of assigning, you know, the labels of personality disorders to people who have certain traits, right? Like we hear a lot about, that person's a narcissist or someone's moody and therefore
they're
borderline. we'll leave that to the listener's imagination.
I'm just thinking.
Can you talk about how these clinical terms have entered into the sort of popular culture and, you know, how they differ from what an actual personality disorder is?
Well, I always like telling the story that I got into personality psychology because I thought it was the opposite of clinical psychology, only to find out in my career that I was wrong. And this is something that's happened in the last decade or so. There's been kind of a reconciliation between our fields such that we really now know that we're studying kind of the same thing. So if you go to the personality disorder folks, they have a system very similar to the Big Five, and they're largely overlapping. And so they have a dimensional system instead of a categorical system, and they correlate quite highly with the Big Five. The distinction there being dysfunction or maladaptiveness. And that is, you know, at certain times, our personalities might, let's say, cause us to some serious distress. And that is typically when you would go in to see a therapist, and that might be when you would get a personality disorder diagnosis. What they've found is that those personality disorders are no different than personality traits in the sense that they are consistent, but they also are changeable and can be changed. It was an old school perspective that they were categories and they were unchangeable and they were fixed. And that was the same kind of attitude we had towards personality traits. We now know that both share a lot in common in terms of content and in terms of continuity and change. The distinction there is your personality causing you to suffer? And if it is, that's when you start wandering into the personality disorder literature. And something like narcissism, which is high extroversion, low agreeableness, and a lot of entitlement, you know, tends to be a combination of the Big Five and tends to also change over time, but can cause you. I don't think it causes the individuals who possess it distressed personally. I think it causes the people around them distressed, to be honest with you. But, you know, that's one case of one personality disorder. So.
Well, we're almost out of time. Olga, I want to last question to you. Given, I know you said you can't do the improv classes. We had the Omicron variant put a big damper on a lot of things. But is there one thing that you think you're going to continue doing from your project that maybe?
Yeah. So I'm actually back in improv. The second that opened back up, I came back to it. I just find that it's a really great way to to kind of have this period of time set aside for being more relaxed and social in a way that, so I live outside of DC, which is a very competitive place. and it's just nice to do something that is anti-competitive. Like it's very just like silly and kind of freeform. So I find that has been a really positive change for me personally, but obviously other things will appeal to other people.
All right. Well, we'll call that a yes and answer, I guess.
Yes.
Olga Hazan is a staff writer at The Atlantic. Her piece is called "I Gave Myself 3 Months to Change My Personality. The Results Were Mixed." We've also been speaking with Dr. Brent Roberts, professor of psychology at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Olga, Brent, thanks so much for being with us today to talk about this on the 21st.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me, too.
And that is all the time we have for our program today. The 21st is produced by, as I said, a group of people who all score pretty high on openness. Anna Casey is also fairly agreeable, while Aidan Choate is more down the middle. Erica Scalise is super conscientious. Our interns are Owen Henderson, Zainab Qureshi, and Brielle Skullark. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey, very low on neuroticism because, honestly, it's probably going to be just fine. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.